Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for BP Southside, Baseball Prospectus' local site covering the Chicago White Sox. I'm Colin Whitchurch, co-editor-in-chief of BP Southside, joining me today. It's our first time in a while of it being the two of us, the other co-editor-in-chief of BP Southside, Nick Schaefer. What's up, Nick?
Hey, yeah, it's been a long time. It has been since last year.
Yes.
For two of us.
You've done a few. You've done a few in the interim. You've picked up the slack. You and Mark had a good Hall of Fame podcast. You and Frank,
basically another Hall of Fame podcast. I was a guest last Sunday. We're recording Thursday, January 25th. Last Sunday, it's the God, I'm going to butcher the name of the Bad Guys podcast. It's a New York Mets podcast. So I followed the guests before me were David Roth and Jared Seidler. So I'm just going to pretend that I'm not like a huge downgrade there.
So you and I are just guesting on Mets podcast now because I was on.
Yeah,
for all you
yeah,
kids
you're right.
out there. A few weeks
That's
ago.
Right.
Talking about anything but baseball, talking about professional wrestling as Jeff and Jared are wont to do.
Well, and you.
Yeah, that's why they had me on. It was right after the White Sox trade for Soria and Avilan, and they're like, so talk about this trade. And I talked about it for, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes, and they're like, all right, so anyway, on to Wrestle Kingdom.
You guys got a solid – I listened to a startlingly high percentage of that, given how much I know about wrestling, which is to say what I know is what I heard on that podcast. But you talked about Jake Peter for like 5 minutes.
I did. Yeah, a lot of Jake Peter talk. So that podcast is, I doubt Jeff or Jarrett listened to this one, but I mean, we talked wrestling for about an hour and a half, and that was like a third of that podcast, I think.
I recommend that podcast to anyone who's
baseball. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Like it's a little bit of just sadism on my part to listen to them rant about the Mets, but you learn a lot about how to analyze even back end roster moves. Obviously, they're two very important pieces of our prospect team. They talk about more than just the Mets. It's a good thing. Ooh, this week's going to be good because the Mets just re-signed Jose Reyes.
Oh yeah.
So you're probably going to get them opening up with both barrels on the organ.
As if they didn't already have enough ammunition, too.
I know.
So anyway, we're recording this on Thursday night, about 7 p.m. Central, Thursday night, right after the Brewers kind of lit the hot stove back aflame with their trading of a couple prospects for Christian Yelich, and then subsequently signing Lorenzo Cain for 5 years, $80 million, I think is what I saw reported. And
that's what I saw.
The first thing I thought of, Nick, is that, you know, the Brewers have always, or not, I shouldn't say always, but in over the past year, built up one of the top farm systems in baseball, just like the White Sox have. So kind of just to tie this into White Sox, I think to myself, you know, we've yet to see how successful the Brewers will be with this model. But it's a logical next step in a contention cycle, and it's something that you could see the White Sox pursuing maybe next offseason or two offseasons from now, where you say, okay, we've built up this top farm system. Some of the guys have started to come up and contribute. Now let's supplement that with a big free agent signing and some crafty trades to you know, take that next step in contention.
Yeah, and they weren't far off last year.
No.
I think they won 86 games. So it looks like what's being reported by Adam McKelvey, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, only ever seen it written on the page. The Marlins got a ton for Yelich. I mean, rightfully so. Yelich is really good. He's really young. He's signed for 5 years for very cheap. They gave up Lewis Brinson, who's been a global top 10 prospect very recently, or right about there. I know they gave up, and it looks like they gave up Ehsan Diaz, Monty Harrison, and Jordan Yamamoto. I've never heard of that fourth name. Brinson's obviously like a high risk, super high ceiling, really strong defensive center fielder, great athlete, should have a lot of pop and speed. And then the hit tool is like a big question. Ehsan Diaz is someone that I know. You could even go back, if you guys remember Mal Rubio, he wrote a good profile on Isan Diaz before he was hired by a team. Isan Diaz is like a middle infielder who's got some really intriguing bat speed and power. I'm blanking on Monty Harrison, but I know he's like got prospect buzz, or has at least enough for me to have heard of him deep down on the Brewers list. So they gave him quite a bit, especially given that Yelich had basically said, "Yo, I want out of here," as soon as the rest of the offseason became clear. I'm really excited to see the Brewers do this because, it's like you said, it's easy enough to just hoard things and assemble, stockpile minor league assets. But we all know minor league assets don't always pan out, and often they're just as, they might be more valuable in trade than they are as a player in them themselves. I think we were talking about this in the Slack where Kenny Williams' tenure as GM did not end as well as it began, but he flipped a lot of prospects at the height of their value who turned out to mean not a whole lot. Granted, if you trade a highly rated prospect and you get something back that doesn't turn out to do anything for you, you have the opportunity cost that maybe you could have traded them for something else. But like, they traded Royce Ring away when he was for Roberto Alomar. And at the time I was like, oh no, Royce Ring, he's like their stud prospect. Royce Ring was nothing. Turned out to be nothing. Jeremy Reed, I was like, oh no, they traded this mega stud outfield prospect for Freddy Garcia. And, we saw, and Mark wrote this up earlier this week, Jeremy Reed didn't turn into anything. So, not really. He was a fourth outfielder or a glove only center fielder for a few minutes. So you hear about these trades where people give up a prospect and they get a veteran and they don't do anything. And then the prospect goes on to be really good. And everyone's like, ah, what idiots. But, it doesn't always work out that way. A lot of time it doesn't work out that way. Aaron Pareda for Jake Beavy, these are a lot of nice prospects for the Marlins, though, for sure.
For sure. And Brinson obviously is the one with the most name value. This is the second time he's been traded. I think it's the second time Diaz has been traded too. I don't recall the trade that Diaz was in, but he was initially with the Diamondbacks, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
Brinson was the centerpiece of the Jonathan Lucroy trade, season and a half, 2 years ago. He got a cup of coffee in the big leagues in 2017 and was very unsuccessful in that cup of coffee, but he's still a global top 100 guy. He's still, not far off from being one of the more elite prospects in the game. So yeah, it's kind of funny. I don't know what you think. Maybe the money is one of the reasons, but it's kind of funny that they got more for Yelich, it seems, than they got for Stanton.
They definitely did.
Yeah.
They got, one of the rare times I heard from a scout, I overheard a scout like talking about how much they love Jorge Guzman, who the Marlins got for Stanton. But, Guzman's probably a 70th percentile outcome for him would be like Tommy Canley or something like that, something really nice. But, and that's high. I mean, he's still like 22 or something. He's still an A ball. And he's probably a reliever, could still be a starter, but, you've got, I think two of these guys for sure. And maybe three of them would be the best guy in that Stanton return by a mile.
Yeah.
So this is a really nice haul. But what's interesting to me too is that the like you were saying, it's that consolidation trade. It makes a ton of sense. And the White Sox, it may be too soon for them to start doing it this winter, but it wouldn't even necessarily be crazy. I mean, they're probably going to want more time to evaluate all these pretty new assets they have and watch them a little more. But obviously, if you think somebody's not going to be as good as you'd hoped, you want to get rid of them before everybody else notices. Or cash them in. I shouldn't say get rid of them. That's cruel and not correct.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to me that they added Yelich and Kane back to back, like within what, like 20 minutes of each other.
Yeah.
Something like that. And outfield was not an area of need.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, especially considering the type of prospects that the Brewers have or the type of young talents, I mean, they still have Domingo Santana. They still have Brett Phillips, both of whom were acquired from the Astros, I believe, both of whom have seen time in the majors. I think Santana even more so. So, I mean, I think I forget the reporter. I'm scrolling through Twitter as we talk. Just said that they are now shopping. Oh, it was Bob Nightingale. Said the Brewers are now shopping Domingo Santana and Brett Phillips for starting pitching.
I mean, they'd have to be.
Yeah, they would have to be. So obviously more moves are on the horizon. David Stearns is he's proving to be quite the thrifty GM is the right way of putting it, but he's got some moves up his sleeves, and it's nice to see that Brewers ownership is letting him spend money on a player like Kane, who of course was initially a Brewer. I don't know if people remember that. He was a part of the
trade. He was the Greinke trade.
Yeah. So you know, I like seeing, you know, I've never had anything against the Brewers. They're going to be a fun team. Whether or not it's successful or not in the long run is to be determined. But Yelich and Kane, and Yelich especially being so young, locked up for the next 5 years with Braun or one of the other outfielders if they decide to go that route and unload Braun if they're able to, it makes for a fun outfield, that's for sure.
And it's a fun team. I mean, you have Eric Thames, who he wound up just being a solid first baseman last year, you know, a league average one, but obviously he flashed some pretty crazy power.
Yeah.
Orlando Arcia was a top prospect not too long ago, and he finally had a breakout year last year. Jonathan Villar was insanely good as recently as 2016.
That's my guy.
Yeah. Crazy, a huge fantasy asset that year. Yeah. I think I got him in like the 14th round or something. It was awesome. But you know, jury's still out. Houston did get Cy Snead back for him, so you know, may have still been a win for Houston. But yeah, I mean, Travis Shaw, like, I guess it was for real. I don't know.
He was pissing off Red Sox fans last year, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was hysterical. No, the Brewers are really fun. I was last year. I've always had. Certainly, since they left the AL and they're not a division rival, I have no reason not to root for them. And they've had some fun teams and some fun players, certainly fun players that didn't get enough national attention. I was such a big Ben Sheets fanboy back in the day.
Same. Even going back to when he was it the 2000 Olympics?
I don't follow Olympic baseball. I didn't at the time.
You know, it was one of those things where I just remember, you know, I think they won the gold medal with like Tommy Lasorda as their manager and a bunch of these amateurs, or minor leaguers. I don't remember exactly. I was 13, but Ben Sheets was the ace of the gold medal winning team. And then he went on to pitch for the Brewers like shortly thereafter.
Yeah. I think, what's interesting about choosing to trade Santana, obviously he's their most valuable piece who's not in a penciled into a starting role. Braun is not a durable dude, so
no.
You could theoretically hang on to Santana if you don't get something you like. Keon Broxton's still floating around.
He was a dude who I targeted in like every fantasy league last year as like a late round. Oh, this dude could be kind of a sleeper who provides some decent value.
He's fast.
And I thought he'd be maybe decent batting average. Braun, though, I was just looking. So Braun is going to be so he's 34. He'll play. This will be his age 34 season. And he is owed $20 million this year, and then $19 in 2019, $17 in 2020. And then he has a mutual option for $15 million in 2021. That will be his age 37 season. And he has, I guess he played 104 games last year, 135 in 2016. It's been, you know, 104 was actually the low water mark for the last 4 years. But, and you know, he was fine last year. He wasn't a $20 million a year player, you know, but definitely trending downward, you know, considering the age and the injury history there. You know, I don't know if the Brewers are able to get out of that contract and plug in Santana or whomever there in the left, but I feel like that would probably be their preference.
I mean, Braun, is still obviously was still really good as recently as 2016 as well. Any given year, he can uncork, you know, 130, 140 really good games of baseball. It's just not a lot of certainty there. I guess my it makes sense that you would flip Santana because the more cost efficient guy is clearly going to get you more of a return, given how trades have been going the last couple of cycles. But they definitely need pitching. We were talking right before we started recording. Jimmy Nelson finally, I've been waiting for him to break out for forever. He finally broke out and then tore his rotator cuff diving back on a pickoff play at first base as like a base runner, I think, at the end of last year. Anytime there's an injury to a pitcher's throwing shoulder, I'm just going to assume the worst until I see otherwise. I don't know what they'll get from him. The rotation's like an interesting mix of like soft tossers who do cool stuff to get by. Like Chase Anderson and Zach Davies are both guys who punch above their weight, and they're cool pitchers, and I think they're solid mid rotation guys. A Junior Guerra, White Sox alum, can be effective, but he hasn't, you know, he doesn't have an extended track record, and he's already quite old. And then you've got Yovani Gardo is and Chacin are really just sort of, I mean, Chacin, there's little more hope that he could perform than Gallardo at this point, I would think. But they're both, I mean, the bullpen still looks good. The rotation needs help. So if Santana can bring back number three, number four type guy, even short term, it makes a ton of sense because this is a playoff team by all, you know, it looks to me like a playoff team. Or certainly has they have the pieces to trade for, to supplement this core. I mean, this whole freaking lineup. It'd be weird to me if they didn't sign, I mean, even if it's not Darvish, it'd be weird if they didn't sign someone like Cobb or someone like Lynn. I feel like Lance Lynn would just be a nice, you know, chunk of solid innings to throw at this rotation because the defense should be awesome. I mean, I feel like Arcia is a really good defensive shortstop. VR is overqualified at second base. He was a shortstop originally, I think. Kane and Yelich are both center fielders out there. Braun's not great, but, you know, he doesn't have to do a ton. I feel like they're really set as far as that goes. So yeah. I feel like they need to sign a pitcher. Even if they trade for something, I think they need one more on top of that.
I mean, James Shields is presumably available.
I mean, I just took a big swig of beer when you said that.
Yeah,
and that's going to be my response. That's going to be my response to your James Shields quip.
Well, I guess we could use that to transition into some actual White Sox talk. You and I had a conversation off the air about a week ago about, you know, the roster is pretty much seems to be in full shape heading into spring training, which is, I think the report date is less than a month away now. You know, their 40-man roster is currently full. I don't see any. I wrote a week or two ago about how, you know, the only areas where you could see them maybe adding depth or maybe not being happy with their starter is center field, with the potential of maybe left field or third base, depending on how they feel internally about entering the season with Yolmer Sanchez or Nicky Delmonico or some combination of Adam Engel or Leury Garcia. The rotation seems relatively set with Gilito, Lopez, Fulmer, Shields, and now Miguel Gonzalez back in the fold. And the bullpen with the addition of Sorian Avilan mixed in with Nate Jones and some of the other young arms. I don't see a lot of areas where they might add pieces other than, you know, maybe those spots or maybe some depth. You know, maybe they bring in another starting pitcher or two to have this AAA depth there with so many young guys and James Shields in the rotation. So what do you think? Do you think we're pretty much set heading into Glendale?
I'd be surprised if anything major happened. I think it's worth monitoring in terms of, you know, Anthony Swarzak was a minor league deal who came into spring training and won a spot and obviously turned into like a really good setup man who got traded for a good player. Or not a good player, but more than just a, he got traded for something interesting. Cordell is an interesting piece.
Sure.
I think it's worth, I mean, it sometimes, you know, Miguel Gonzalez got put on waivers like really early, and I can't remember if that was spring training or if that was really early in the season.
It was either spring training. Yeah, I think it was spring training or really late in spring training.
So that could, you know, stuff like that can happen and have be meaningful, even if that's unusual. That can happen. This is such a weird off season. I think I've been starting to wonder where it's like, you know, at what point, if this has a meaningful impact on the actual salaries these players actually wind up signing for, by which I mean the, especially the top end guys like the Darvish, the Arrieta, the
JD Martinez,
especially someone like Arrieta, where he's, you know, the number two option on this market. I wonder if it makes sense. I don't know if it's actually going to suppress their salaries. Kane got $580. I was just talking to Kate Feldman on Twitter quickly about it, of BP Mets, that was more years than I was expecting. I thought he'd get a 4-year deal, but because he's a little older than you might think.
He's 31 or 32, right? Yeah.
He turns 32 before the season starts, I think, or right about when the season starts. But it was lower dollars per year than I thought. So, but still, 5 years, 80 is a solid contract. If you can get Arrieta for, or even Cobb or Lynn or something like that for like less than you think they're worth, then even if you're rebuilding or whatever, I don't know. I think you kind of just, there's a point where even if you don't care about 2018's win loss record, don't you kind of just try it?
Yeah, I mean, I agree, and I think that I wouldn't put it past the White Sox to think about it that way or consider something like that. It's just so hard to predict, especially with how wonky the market has been all offseason long. You know, we're assuming that because the free agency is lasting so long into the offseason and so close to spring training that these guys are going to get less money. You feel like, I mean, That's the logical thought, and it's probably true, but I just find it hard to believe that teams aren't going to eventually give in and say, we really need Yu Darvish, we really need JD Martinez, here's something close to the asking price. Maybe not the asking price, but something close, and the market is going to unfold somewhat normally from a price perspective, even if it's not from a timing perspective.
Yeah, and you'd think, I know that there's all these theories about why teams are doing what they're doing, and there are some really weird factors at play, right? Like the Yankees and Dodgers would normally be bidding on everyone, but the Yankees already scooped up Stanton, and they're both trying to stay under the luxury tax for this really unusual free agent class next winter. The Marlins have decided to forfeit and withdraw from the league. The Mets are normally an organization where, you know, a New York team with a great stadium and a really rabid fan base should be able to print money, but they have their own issues. So, like, that's all at play here. And the Red Sox have already kind of tapped themselves out money-wise, I think. Like, they have a really high payroll for this year. I think it's like $200 million. So that, you know, that exists. But surely you think one team could just look at this free agent market and be like, we could sign like five of these dudes and go from a 75-78 win team to a playoff team. Like, you could go, I mean, if you wanted to, if you're like, man, we've got a solid lineup, but we don't have any pitchers, you could just sign Arrieta, Darvish, Cobb, and Lynn if you want. Like, there's no rule against it. You could just do it.
Right.
I'm wondering if the Brewers, I mean, they did 1-2, right? They signed, I don't know if it's a coincidence they added both these dudes right away, where it's like, if one team jumps, they can, like, scoop everybody. And granted, the players have to agree and participate, because if the Brewers are, like, giving out offers to everybody, they might shop those offers.
Yeah.
But, you know, they'd be crazy not to. But I don't know. I mean, if I woke up tomorrow morning and the Brewers had signed Darvish and Cobb, I mean, like, screw it. Like, the division might be theirs. Like, that might be it. So, you'd think at a certain point somebody would look at it and say, yeah, you know, I'll get my payroll up into the top 10 for this season. But like all of a sudden, if everybody's asleep at the wheel, I can just scoop up a playoff spot. That seems pretty cool. I mean, granted, the Brewers are doing some of this cheaply because Yelich is they're giving up talent, not money.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's super interesting. I don't think the White Sox are going to do that at this point, obviously, because they're still not even positioned to, even if they sign that full rotation of dudes, they're still not really positioned to compete. Maybe that'd be interesting. Like what's the White Sox win loss record if they sign those four starting pitchers and do nothing else? I don't know. but there are legitimate non-anti-competitive reasons for the White Sox to stand pat in terms of, you mentioned Nicky Delmonico. Like, I don't know what he is. I feel like the organization needs another, like, 300 or 400 plate appearances before you feel comfortable deciding what the hell to do with him, right?
For sure.
You're not trying to sign some dude to, I mean, yeah, if you sign JD Martinez, like, you know, deal with it. But, like, some of these guys who are going to wind up being cheaper on 1 or 2 year deals than you'd normally think, it might not be worth it to block a guy who, hey, if you think he could be a solid regular in left, what, you know, but you want playing time to figure it out. Like, playing time is the great, is the underrated, like, value of tanking.
Yeah, for sure. And it's tough to kind of strike that balance between, with guys like Delmonico or Yolmer or Engel, that balance between, well, we want to play these guys because we want to find out what they are. We want to find out if we want them to be a part of our team in 2019, 2020, et cetera, while also finding good value in the free agent market or even just scooping up guys on, you know, 1 or 2 year deals like they did with Derek Holland and trying to flip them for prospects in July. Obviously, Holland is a bad example because it worked out terribly. But I know that that's always been part of the equation, is finding guys who maybe are looking to rebuild their value on a 1 year deal and then cash in the following year, and or you can flip them for prospects. So the idea between doing that and also, you know, finding out what you have in some of these young guys, you know, I mentioned the projected starting rotation earlier, and I didn't even mention Carlos Rodon because we don't know what his injury status is. So really they have six projected starting pitchers going into the season with one, a health question mark. So that's why I kind of feel like this is what we're going to get, because I don't see a lot of room on the roster.
Yeah. It's awkward too, because I wouldn't trust any of those dudes to throw 180. I wouldn't bet on any of those dudes throwing 180 innings, right?
Yeah.
Like maybe Shields throws 180 hideous innings, but at the same time, you don't want to like block them out of the gate. Because you want to see, like, Fulmer and Lopez in particular, you're not sure if they're starters, I would think. And some people aren't sure about Giolito either. I think he's starter. It's just a question of how good.
Yeah, you're certainly more confident in Giolito being a starter than either of the other two.
Yeah, and so it's like, okay, you want to give them a shot, but if they also could crash and burn, and then you don't want to be stuck with like just to like literally to get through. I mean, that's why like Miguel Gonzalez is so nice to have around, and I wrote about that. So it's awkward. Like, you could want to sign like Cobb and Lynn or something like that could wind up helping you compete in 2019, and they might be better value than even waiting to 2019 to try to sign guys when everyone's saving their powder to fire on that, you know, offseason. You don't necessarily want to block Fulmer and Lopez now, because now's the time to find out if they can do it. So it's a little bit awkward in that sense. I guess they have internal options to get them through if they need to, right? You can throw stuff at it until something sticks. I mean, there's a decent amount of guys coming up, starting to finally arrive behind. I mean, Spencer Adams is getting close. Spencer Adams finally got 150 innings at AA last year. That's not that far off. If you want to do something in midseason, he's going well. Kopech could be ready quite soon. Clarkin is still like oddly a ways away, even though he's been around forever. But AJ Puckett is like, these are dudes who are Jordan Stevens. Maybe you finally find out if you care about Tyler Danish at all. I don't know. I mean, there's stuff you can do if you just need innings.
Yeah, I think that they will. I would be shocked, honestly, if they don't add another, you know, a guy at the level, you know, like Mike Pelfrey last year, someone who is good enough, who you know can eat innings at the major league level if necessary, but not not good enough to where he demands a major league roster spot right off the bat. You know, they stored Pelfrey away at AAA, and as soon as an injury hit, which was very soon into the season, they called him up, and he spent, I think, the rest of the big league season with the club. And there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of very meh names out there that are unsigned, probably as they wait for the rest of the market to unravel. The guys I mentioned in my piece a week or two ago are, you know, guys like Jeremy Hellickson or Ricky Nolasco. You know, those dudes are sitting there, and eventually all the chips are going to fall on these top level free agents, and the White Sox are going to pick someone who, you know, maybe isn't as confident they're going to get a major league deal or isn't going to get the money that they want, and they can scoop them up and just add depth. I feel like that's more important in pitching than on the positional side, because, you know, while we mentioned Angel, Delmonico, Sanchez, it's like, well, you know, behind Sanchez, they also have Saladino. They also have Leury García, who can play anywhere. You know, he can play left field. He can play center field. I don't know if they play him at third base. I feel like they have at times.
I'm sure he could.
Yeah, he could. So they have – well, I didn't even mention Matt Davidson, you know, who's projected to be the opening day designated hitter, who also plays third base and plays first base. They have got all this – flexibility among guys who you
I mentioned
want to
Ryan Cordell, who can play three outfield spots and a little bit of third.
And he's like, right there at the major league. I mean, he's 26 or something, isn't he?
Yeah, he missed time with a back injury, which you don't love. But
yeah, he hasn't played since he joined the White Sox organization, I don't believe.
He's doing stuff now, but
he's doing stuff now. But he'll be 26, right around opening day. So he's someone obviously who you'll want to give a shot to sooner rather than later. That's why positionally I really feel like they're set. I think the only decision they really have to make is A, the starters at those three positions, and B, who you want to be the backup catcher behind Wellington Castillo.
There is that difference between offense and defense, right? Where like pitching on the position player side, if you run out of good players or serviceable players, it's like, all right, well, you know, especially if the guy can defend the position he's at, it's like, all right, yeah, he's just not going to hit. It's like the absence of quality. It's like, oh, runs that don't get scored or hits that don't get hit. You don't, like, notice that as much. You notice when there's a dude who gives up 8 runs and gets 2 outs because he just literally can't get anyone out. Like, you can punt a position in your lineup if you don't care about winning. You could just punt it and it just happens. You know, guy goes up, he gets struck out, whatever. If you don't have enough dudes to get enough outs, like, you just can't function. The games don't end. You know,
I mean, people would be a lot more upset about a pitcher going out there and failing to get through the third inning out each time than they are about the fact that Adam Engel had 336 plate appearances with a 39 OPS plus. That's not as noticeable, and also because he could play defense.
Exactly. And it's like Adam Engel getting 340 plate appearances, him getting a lot of playing time isn't going to injure him.
Exactly.
A pitcher getting left out there, like, you guys remember Ryan Webb? I mean, like, he got asked to, like,
Daniel,
Dan Jennings.
Daniel Webb.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, geez, God, that's terrifying. Why does anyone ride ATVs? If anyone knows, let me know. But, God, that poor guy. But, like, you can't just be like, yeah, we're not pitching this inning. We're just not.
And especially when a lot of the guys, like sure, let James Shields go out there and get bombed and throw until his arm falls off. You know, that's not going to do anything to the long-term, your team's long-term plan. You can't take that same approach with Carson Palmer, because even if Carson Palmer fails the starting pitcher, you still have some hope that he can have some value in the bullpen down the road. He's only, what is he, 23, 24? Same with,
I think he's 25, but yeah.
Yeah, same with Reynaldo Lopez, is that there are, with the young guys who you don't know if they're starters yet,
he's younger than that. He's 24. He just turned 24. My bad.
Yeah. Even if they fail as starting pitchers, you still want to preserve them for so they can hopefully have value for you down the road.
Or you could let them save six games in a row.
Hey, Addison Reed's doing great.
Yeah. Yep.
How much money did he just get from the Twins?
It was the setup man deal for this winter. So 2 years, like 18 mil.
Yeah.
Something like that. I don't know. That's what everyone's getting. But yeah, there's plenty of dudes sitting out there. If you're at the end of spring training, or some of these guys may even be available on minor league deals to stash in AAA. I mean, just looking at this list, there's so many dudes. Like, I don't know if Clay Buchholz gets a major league deal. Trevor Cahill was effective last year, although you can't really count on him. You've got somebody needs to sign Ari Dickey if they haven't already. Jaime Garcia is out there. AJ Griffin. John Lackey's out there. Liriano's out there, although I'd rather not see him in a White Sox uniform again just because of bad memories. Wade Miley, like all these generic. None of these guys are good. I'd actually be kind of interested if the White Sox took a flyer on Chris Tillman.
Yeah.
It feels like guys who leave the Orioles sometimes see an uptick in their performance. He was a well-regarded guy. He's had good seasons, and the White Sox are – he's the type of reclamation project I think the White Sox could succeed with. So Tillman might be a guy where it's just worth doing. Maybe you sign him on a one-year deal, polish him up, and maybe flip him if you can.
Chris Tillman's only like 2 years removed from being good, isn't he?
He was
good terrible in 2016. Last year.
He was good in 2016.
Yeah, so 2 years ago.
Not great. He was good. Yeah. I mean, that might be in Chris Tillman's interest to give the White Sox a try.
I just Googled, Clay Buchholz, and the first page of Google results speculate him signing with the Red Sox, Nationals, Yankees, and Tigers.
he threw seven innings last year.
Yeah. So it's all these articles. It's literally just all of these articles saying maybe this team should take a flyer on Clay Buchholz. So everyone's got kind of the same idea we do.
Yeah, no, they're not. The White Sox are the only ones who have access to Google. But man, Clay Buchholz, his peripherals were always bad, even when he was good. It drove me nuts. There's. I don't see any major moves left this offseason. Granted, I didn't see Wellington Castillo coming, even though I very much approve of the move.
You didn't see Jose Rondon coming? Come on. Didn't even mention him, all the glut of position players they have. Oh, yeah, they've got Jose Rondon on the 40-man also. I assume he's going to start the year as the starting shortstop in Charlotte, but he's right there too, and you know, with the Cordells of the world.
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. I do wonder. Adam Engel is really God. Charlie Tilson is still on the depth chart here on roster resource too. I just don't.
I'm rooting for Charlie Tilson. I know he's kind of he's become kind of a joke because he can't find the field. But man, I really want him to find the freaking field. I want him to get healthy. Yeah, if he starts the year as White Sox opening day center fielder or even opening day fourth outfielder, hell yeah, let's do it.
If he can be on the field, even with his time away, I'd still be really confident in him ahead of Adam Engel. If Adam Engel puts it together, obviously great. I'm not rooting for any of these guys. I root for Jose Reyes to fail. I'm not rooting for any of these like nice kids to fail.
Yeah.
But he's already 26. Like that's a thing, you know, it's easy to say, oh, he's a rookie. He needs more time. And yeah, I'm sure more looks at major league pitching will help him. But this is a guy who's been really old for his level at every step of the way. And his career minor league OPS is 740. Like I know he had that AFL, that magical Arizona Fall League.
Was it like 50 plate appearances to – I don't know how many plate appearances guys get in AFL season, but
– I don't know, but like he really – he struck out 117 times in 336 plate appearances. That's freaking nuts. That's almost like 40%. It's insane. I just don't – I think it's unrealistic. I mean, this is a guy who as recently as last year got beat out by Jacob May, and we all saw how that worked out. Like, Yes, 35% K percentage, basically. Like, I just don't see him being – he may not even be a fourth outfielder. Like, he's a good defensive center fielder, but he's not, like, a great defense. He's a good defensive center fielder, and he's a good base runner by our metrics. But he hits like a pitcher, and I just don't know. I just don't know if you can do that. If he can get his 740 minor league OPS in the majors, then yeah, that's a player. But I don't know if he can, and I don't know how much more time. What you give him? Oh, give him 2 years to figure out. Great, he's like almost 30.
Yeah, he's the one guy where I'm kind of just like, maybe it's unfair, but I'm just kind of out on him. I'm like, you know, and I know you and I are both big Leury fanboys, so obviously I would love to see more Leury Garcia. I would love to see Tilson finally be healthy. And I love Yolmer, and I love Nicky Delmonico. I'm excited to see them if the White Sox run them out there as opening day starters. An Engel kind of fits that same mold just in terms of young, unproven, probably not a starter long term, but a starter on a rebuilding team. But I'm way more into the idea of giving those guys plate appearances than Adam Engel. Sorry, Adam.
No, for sure. I mean, Jose Rondon's a good guy to bring up. Tito Polo is someone who might see center field run this year. He came over in the trade with the Yankees. Daniel Palka is somebody they added. But
Tito Polo is not really close to the majors.
Not like to start the year, but I think he might get there.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's at 143 plate appearances in Double A for his career. He hasn't seen Triple A yet. So, but he is. I know that's not always conducive to how close to being ready they are. He is 23. He'll be 24 toward the end of this season. So maybe you're right.
I mean, I just think that it's Tito Polo is more relevant than Adam Engel at this point.
For sure.
Just because he hasn't failed that hard yet. He had a solid year last year. It was like a contact on base heavy year across high A and Double A. And he's older. So yeah, he's 23. So he obviously had some run behind Jose Quintana in the World Baseball Classic last year as well.
Yeah.
It's probably good experience for him. But Daniel Palka is not a center fielder, but he's a dude who's 26. He's gotten like a million. He's bounced around a ton on waivers.
I keep forgetting that they have him. Like,
I know
they added him. When did they add him? Like, it was like right. It was like during the playoffs. Even
it was in November. Palka. Think of Brad Eldred. Think of Dallas McPherson. Just AAA three true outcomes, dude. I'm pretty sure. Ryan Cordell's a guy who I'd rather see than Engel, and he's theoretically someone who could play center a little bit, maybe a couple days a week. I'm interested to see what they do. I mean, Davidson, as much as I love Davidson, might start getting squeezed pretty quickly for playing time. He had his audition last year.
As soon as like Eloy Jimenez is ready, for example, then you're probably moving Avisail Garcia to designated hitter if you don't trade him. And then, you know, do you really want to see Matt Davidson playing every day at third base? I probably don't.
Unless the question is if Davidson can get his on base up towards league average.
Yeah, that's not even taking into consideration the hitting aspect of it,
right.
Which is obviously, you know, he hit a lot of really fun dingers last year, but you know, not necessarily a huge asset with the bat otherwise
if Davidson's got an on base of like 330, 340, then he's like a perfectly fine major league bench bat, platoon DH, first base, you know, four corners backup, or not four corners because you can't play the outfield, but, you know, bench guy. But yeah. If it's 300, 310, probably not.
And it was only 260 last year. So it wasn't even 300 or 310.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's tough.
And then also it would be, you know, you see a lot of those free swinging masher types, and the ones who kind of separate themselves and have some longevity are ones who, even if they strike out a lot, take some walks. And obviously that goes hand in hand with the OBP, but you know, you can live with 165 strikeouts in 440 plate appearances. You can't live with 19 walks in 440 plate appearances.
No. And it's weird because I think his swing's like really pretty.
Yeah.
Especially for a right-handed bat. But like, it's just not quite there. That's not to say it can't be, but he's getting older as well. And some of these guys are going to start coming up behind. And if Tilson is healthy, I feel like you give him a shot just to see what you got.
I agree.
I think he needs some, I mean, maybe give him a month in AAA just to like play baseball again for the first time. And like, since, I don't know, like 5 years ago or whenever he last played. But yeah, maybe you do. I mean, maybe some of this is like the argument for trading Abascal. Cause if you don't think he's an all-star and you just think he's like a solid corner outfielder, then I don't know if you're, what the point is of like clinging to that.
Yeah.
And that's not like, this isn't going back to me saying like Abascal's a non-tender candidate like he was before this past season. But if he's not hitting 320 or whatever, he's pretty ordinary.
Definitely.
And if you've got this group of dudes that you need to sort through, maybe you're looking at the trade return you get for Avi, a year and a half of Abascal, and saying like, yeah, we could really use July, August, September to get a look at, Cordell, get a look at Tilson, get a look at these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what? Cause you're not going to want to do it in 2019, especially if you go out and sign Josh Donaldson or something over that off season, like, and an arm and you get the development you hope for out of like Kopech and Eloy and Moncada, like you're not going to want to be auditioning fringy dudes at that point.
Yeah. I feel like if they really are going to kind of make that push toward contention between 2018 and 2019, maybe make some big free agent acquisitions, maybe act in a similar fashion to as we've seen the Brewers do today. Then that makes the end of the 2018 season that much more important, because I mean you saw it a little bit this year this past season where you got the Giolitos and the Lopez's of the world, you know, a decent amount of run to prep them for 2018. You saw some late season promotions from at the minor league level with Kopech and Hanson going to Charlotte, Jimenez I think going to Charlotte too. Where people are jumping levels in preparation for the next year. Well, 2018 to 2019, it'll be hopefully that next jump, and that will be them getting into the presumed contention cycle. So it'll make things a lot more important.
Like, let's say if Moncada takes another step forward this year, let's say if you don't trade Abreu and Abascal, you still have Wellington Castillo for the next season and a couple guys who look like solid backups. I mean, I don't know, like you're already, like the roster starts filling itself out really quickly if you hang on to those two established major leaguers on top, or I guess three now with Castillo. At a certain point, it becomes wasteful not to like really go for it.
Definitely.
Even if the pipeline's not tapped out. I know Baseball America released their podcast about the White Sox top prospects.
That is where I was going to transition to next. So you are, we've talked a lot about the Baseball Prospectus top 10. That's obviously our preference, our preferred prospect, our preferred prospect list. But yeah, Baseball America came out with theirs. I think MLB Pipeline is right behind them. They're going to be coming out with theirs soon. I don't know if there's a lot worth discussing there, but it's worth mentioning. The thing that I like that Baseball America does, as I'm looking here, is that they do the best tools for each thing. And I don't know if anything really stands out to you there.
Best slider, Zach Birdie, surprised me.
Best defensive infielder.
I didn't know the slider was that good.
best defensive infielder kind of stands out to me too, because I know that's another. We mentioned so many of the, you know, kind of guys who are more interesting than Angle or people who are worth taking a look at, you know, down the road. And he's someone we hadn't even mentioned, but that's like one of their few middle infield prospects that are there. And I don't know, I talk to people who like him more than others. I know that when they got him for, I get the Rangers trades mixed up. They got him for IFA money, right?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. And they got him, blanking on the name of the, he was like a high draft pick, but he hasn't done anything in the pros. Toolsy, like third base type dude for Miguel Gonzalez. Kelby, something? I don't know. Can't remember.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember either.
But yeah, I think it was
Jarrett who tweeted after that deal was done. He said, that's a player who is a lot better than someone that you usually see traded for IFA money. And maybe that was
Irizarry. Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe that was the Rangers starting their pursuit of Ohtani, which was a failed pursuit, just as the Mariners one was. But that's someone who I'm a little bit more intrigued by. I also enjoy seeing Zach Remillard on this list for best infield arm, just because I latched onto him. You know, I don't follow college baseball that closely. I'm not like Michael Bauman or something like that, but I always follow the College World Series pretty closely. And I latched onto Coastal Carolina the year that they made their surprising run to a College World Series title.
Oh, nice.
And Zach Remillard was their starting third baseman and their number three hitter. So I was like, all right, I love this dude. And then the White Sox drafted him in like the 19th round. So he's still there in the system.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun. You're right. This tools breakdown is fun. I like Baseball America. I mean, they're good at what they do. They've been doing it for a long time. They have a lot of good contacts. And it's like you said, this tools thing is interesting, where like best defensive outfielder being Luis Alexander Basabe is a big deal to me, because if he's a true good center fielder, then he doesn't need to hit a whole lot. And that's really exciting. And he's toolsy as hell. So like he's not. He was in the, I think he was in consideration for top 100 last year, even if he wasn't there. And obviously he had a down year. He was apparently dealing with a knee thing, but you know, that's a guy who could take a leap forward this season. Irizarry's really toolsy. So he's just like, I think he's apparently about as extreme as you can possibly get it about swinging at everything, which presents problems. But you know, in a system with like, for Basabe, I mean, in a system with, say, like, you know, college speedsters like, what's his name, Joel Booker?
Yeah.
Guys like that. I mean, the fact that Basabe's rating ahead of him here is maybe Booker's better, but, you know, it's encouraging to see that from a guy who is maybe the difference in the system being, like, good and great. You know, AJ Puckett getting best changeup is encouraging, because AJ Puckett is like, I thought was really good value for a rental of Melky Cabrera.
For sure.
And Puckett's apparently, you know, big physical guy who has a fine fastball, not a great one. It's the type of thing where fastball velocity has gone so bonkers, especially with relievers, that it's easy to forget that if a starting pitcher can hold his velocity from like 91 to 94, that's fine. So if Puckett has a really good change and he can work with, maybe he can find a grip pitch that breaks nicely for him, and he's like a good number four starter for you. And that's like a hugely valuable find. So if that's how it works out. So yeah, cool stuff in here. They tend to like, it's interesting seeing how their top 10 differs. They seem to be more in on some of these college guys, and that kind of makes sense.
Sheets, Jake Berger, you know, they like the fact that the one thing that really stood out to me was Dunning at 5 and Cease at 10 when you compare to I just brought it up.
We had
our top 10 has Cease at 4 and Dunning at 7.
Right. And seeing that, seeing Gavin Sheets at 9 instead of in the next 10. But yeah, and it kind of makes sense too, because you know, BA's got guys covering college, we don't, not live, and we base our rankings a lot on live looks or speaking to people who have live looks. And Gavin Sheets didn't really, he was gassed by the time he played a really long college season, he was gassed at the end of he didn't do super great in pro ball, but you know that I heard from a scout who had Sheets rank, he liked Sheets better than he liked Berger. That's both as like a positive on Sheets and a negative on Berger.
Look at you and your sources.
overhearing stuff is always it's all secondhand, but I heard that a scout liked Sheets better than Berger.
They also Baseball America did their overall top 100, and they had Eloy Jimenez was number 4 on that list. I'm looking forward to BP's top 101 coming out, which I imagine will be within the next couple of weeks as they're wrapping up their top 10 lists. White Sox on BA's top 100. They had Eloy Jimenez is number 4. Michael Kopech is 11. And then they had Alec Hansen, 57. Luis Robert, 58. It is Robert, we learned.
It is. Kim Contreras. Asked him personally.
I thought she asked his agent is what it was.
Or his agent and I think his uncle.
Yeah. And then I thought it was interesting. They also have Dane Dunning in their top 100 at 82. I feel like they are kind of the high watermark for Dunning optimism. Baseball America is having him.
Well, Fernando Tatis Jr. is number 9, by the way, on the BA list. But Dane Dunning, it's interesting because we had Craig Goldstein on for our midseason list when the BP midseason list was released, and he seemed to say that that Dunning would have been in the 60 to 75 range probably, or maybe even higher. But obviously that midseason 50 didn't have the most recent draft class, so sprinkle in another certain group of names, stuff keeps moving over the offseason, and it's even if like the further down you go the list, the closer together these guys get. Like get smaller. So really it's more that like Dunning should be considered in the like 50 to like 150 range, more than, because there's a lot of guys, people are going to have the guys that they like better than others. It's going to be like a preference thing, right? Like you go around these different systems and you say, well, which of these guys do I think is less likely to get hurt? Or which of these, mid rotation type guys is more likely to get a third pitch that they can work, or which one's going to get that extra half grade of command with extra reps. And that's really how you're sorting them. And that's, if you could know that exactly, then, you could make a lot of money working for a team.
I like comparing and contrasting it to our guys, to our prospect team. And like I said, our top 101 hasn't come out yet, but you look at the White Sox top 10 and you can kind of anticipate where guys are going to be placed. You can say, okay, so their top 5 of Jimenez, Kopech, Hansen, Cease, and Robert are almost, they're shoo-ins for the top 101. And then Berger, Dunning, Rutherford, Collins are your next 4. And I imagine anywhere between 2 or 4 of them will make the 101. I wouldn't be surprised to see Dunning be the last of the guys to make the 101. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they had Rutherford and Collins back there in the 90s as well.
Yeah. It's – I mean, all these guys, especially like the Collins and Berger guys where there's the position question.
Yeah.
That'll dictate a lot of what you think where these guys land in your list. Because Zach Collins catcher is a whole lot more interesting than Zach Collins first baseman. Jake Berger third baseman is a whole lot more interesting than Jake Berger first baseman. So if you think the latter, and man, that reminds, just even mentioning first baseman, like Casey Gillespie's still here. Like
Casey Gillespie. Yeah.
That's a thing.
I don't know if you heard, but Jake Peter is no longer here.
I know. That's fine. I think Soria and Avalon are like a lot to get back. I was going to say, now Jake Peter is going to be like the next Jacob Turner over there.
Yep. Thought the same thing. Okay, you got anything else to add for prospect talk, or should we talk a little Hall of Fame before we wrap up?
Well, I do want to say that BA said that the list drops off precipitously after 15 or thereabouts. I mean, it's a free podcast. I'm not like paywalled. I mean, go listen to it. Those guys are good. Yeah. And it's a fun podcast. It's like a nice little half hour. I don't know that I agree. I mean, yeah, the guys in the top 15 are better than the guys in the next 15. That's kind of a like tautology. like yes, like definitionally that's how that works. But you know, and they mention a guy like Ian Hamilton, who's apparently, you know, throwing in the upper 90s. He's like a college starter who the White Sox turned into a reliever, who was somebody even out of the draft. It was like somebody to keep an eye on. He's had good results in pro ball. We've learned to appreciate relievers in recent years a little bit more.
It's another one of my guys. That's another one of my guys.
Yeah, I remember you were on. I remember you were on Ian Hamilton. but like there's more people in here than 15, especially because I remember when I was in college, I had nothing but time to read about baseball, BS baseball stuff, way more time than I have now, and. Those were some of the worst farm systems ever with the White Sox had, and they've got dudes past 15, well past 15, that are way more interesting than they had then, and could still be useful major leaguers. I mean, yeah, you've got our top 10, and then there's the next 10, and then there's – gosh, I'm like – I had to like log in again. I'm trying to pull this up while I'm talking.
I was trying to do that too and couldn't remember my password and gave up.
So obviously like the top 10 you know, that's there. I was surprised when Jake Peter cracked our next 10. I wouldn't have had him ahead of even necessarily Tito Polo or Flores is my
that's your guy.
Cheeseball guy. Yeah, I like Flores, man. Or you know, I think Irizarry and, you know, going down, Irizarry is a total lotto ticket, but his ceiling, like Jarrett Seidler said, I asked him, like, what's his 90th percentile outcome? And he was like, Brandon Crawford's best season, which is like crazy good.
Yeah, it is.
You've got, you know, Casey Gillespie was a top 100 prospect somewhat recently. I understand that he's, you know, an older first base only guy. So like whatever, but you know, having guys like Basabe and Spencer Adams outside the top 10 is pretty bonkers. I think AJ Puckett is interesting. Like I said before, Ian Hamilton was not in our next 10. Flores was not in our next 10. I mean, Cordell is not mentioned anywhere here. Cordell is like major league ready. We just got to see what he can do. Luis Gonzalez, I think is legit. Center field prospect. He may be the best player they took in the draft that year.
I'm still mad that we didn't write him up as a line out in the annual. That's the one name I feel like we missed.
Yeah, I mean, we could have hedged there. I mean, especially because we put, you know, like I said, like I think
Sebi Zavala. That's a, you know,
we yeah, put, totally.
We put Sebi there.
Corey Zingari. No. No. That was a joke. That was a joke. No offense to Corey Zingari.
That pissed me off.
Sorry. Oh, Taquan Forbes is the name of the
there you go. I knew it was a cool name, and it is a cool name. I mean, it's no Sebi Zavala, but it's pretty cool.
No, I think that's where I would differ, because I think that they were saying we prefer, you know, after the top 15 it drops off. And then they were saying, well, we like Ian Hamilton. We like Alex Call. Alex Call is somebody I'm not as high on. So if he's in their top 15, you know, I don't think they're referring to necessarily A.J. Puckett or Ian Clarkin or even Mick Rodolfo or Cordell or somebody. It's like I think there's a lot here. I don't know if I'm just like – a homer, a Zach Birdie. Like, I don't know if they're counting. I don't know who their next five are.
Yeah.
But I think there's more than five dudes here that I'm like very interested in. I don't think there's like a chasm there. I think the drop off comes more at 25 or so, or 30. And if that's the case, like, you know, I can't speak to the 15 to 30 guys as well in the other systems. And I don't really care as much about ranking, like, oh, are the White Sox number one or the Padres number one or the Yankees number one. Like, I don't really care about that.
Yeah.
I just see so many more guys who could actually be useful major leaguers here than I've ever seen. Even going back to when they were winning Org of the Year in like 2000, 2001.
Amado Nunez. I just wanted to throw that name out there because I think we've named every single White Sox prospect except for him. So I wanted to throw one last one in there.
You know what? It's like, is Thiago Vieira, like, is he still prospect eligible?
I don't know, but I feel like he's probably going to be in the bullpen to open the season. Don't you expect that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the bullpen is set, I would think. I mean, yeah, you could bring in the next Swarzak and great, but
Vieira's definitely prospect eligible. He's thrown one major league inning.
Yeah, so.
He threw one inning for the Mariners last year and struck out a batter.
I mean, that's if these trends continue, he'll be the best pitcher of all time.
Didn't you tweet that when they acquired him?
I did. I made that joke. I forgot that I made that joke until I heard myself say it.
August 14th against the Orioles, he pitched the ninth inning of a game that the Mariners lost 11-3.
Who did he strike out?
Okay, hang on. It's going to take me a second. He struck out Joey Ricard. Here's his full inning. He got Chris Davis to line out to himself, so he's a great defensive pitcher. he struck out Joey, is it Ricard or Rickard?
I think it'd be Rickard, but...
He struck him out looking, and then he got Caleb Joseph to ground out to third base. That's his major league career.
Dominant.
They were down 11-2 at the time.
I would genuinely be curious, like, how far... It's like the Mariners' top 10 went up.
Oh, my God, did you read it?
It's rough.
It's great. I love it. Everyone should read it. You know, you want to feel bad about White Sox farm systems of, like, 5 years ago. Go read the Mariners' write-up, which our team did a fantastic job on, as always, and it is just a riot.
I will say, I think the Mariners' prospect list is still better than most of those White Sox years, those in the lean years, because I think Kyle Lewis is better than anybody most of those years had.
Probably, like, but wasn't it
Craig? Years where like Addison Reed or like Trace Thompson or Yoelmer Sanchez were the number ones. It sucks that Lewis's knee, like, got thrown into a thresher or whatever the hell happened to it.
Yeah, but I mean, even him, their top prospect, his OFP is first division outfielder.
And then the next is a 55-45, and the 55-45 is the grades that are rounding out the back of the White Sox top 10. So I guess to answer my question, I could just look at the OFPs and the likelies to see how far down you get before the White Sox.
That's true. I mean,
who'd be number two in the Mariners system, and then I guess you're getting to like Berger would probably be number two in their system. I think.
I mean, where would Carson Fulmer rank in the Mariners system?
Like three or four, I would think.
Yeah, and he's 10 on our list.
Yeah, because Fulmer's a 55-45, and he's the 10. But it's 55-45 is all the way up. Like Collins. Oh, yeah, okay, so Berger, Blake Rutherford's 55-50. So that would be number two in their system, and he's 8. Just going off of that.
Yeah. Yeah, because Sam Carlson's Mariners number 3, and he's 55-45.
Well, their number two is 55-45.
Yeah, 2 and 3 are both 55-45. Oh, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying.
So Hall of Fame.
It's just, I mean, I love that Dan Vogelbach's on here. How often do you see a guy in the top 10? I guess actually Fulmer qualifies now that I think about it. A guy in the top 10 who it says Major League ETA debuted in 2016, and love it's it. 2018.
I saw my favorite stat about Dan Vogelbach is he still hasn't hit as many Major League home runs as Mike Montgomery.
You know, he's the OG large adult son, though. He's the large adult. He was supposed to be the large adult son.
I liked James' argument that Tommy Canley is the large adult son.
Yeah. I mean, he's got that booty.
Well, he said it's about personality as much as it is build.
Yeah. A huge wrestling fan, Tommy Canley.
He's a huge God, I could look up the game. I think he's a huge Bayern Munich fan.
Bayern Munich, I mean, they're like one of the top teams in Europe, top team in Germany for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm a Dortmund fan just because they've got Christian Pulisic.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, got it. The Team USA's hope, man.
No, I know, I know. I don't know how much you actually follow international soccer. I'm a big Chelsea fan.
Okay, so I lived in London for 6 months when I was in college.
So you probably hate Chelsea.
No, so what happened was I moved there. I flew there January 1st of 2008, and when I arrived, Arsenal was like 18-0 or something. And I was living closest, like geographically, the closest team to me was Arsenal. And I had no pre-existing loyalties. But I thought, man, would it be lame for me to show up and just start rooting for the undefeated first place team.
For sure.
I made friends with some local Brits. And one of them was interested in baseball, knew nothing about it. And I was interested in EPL. I'd played soccer, but I hadn't really followed it as a fan. And he was from Birmingham, and he made me an Aston Villa fan.
Ah.
Aston Villa was a solid team for a long time. Then they got bought by
I believe that's Fornelli's team.
Maybe. They got bought by the guy who owned the Cleveland Browns and then got relegated. And now they're in the
that's definitely Fornelli's team.
Yeah, so they went from like a solid like usually finish top, you know, 5 to 10 in the league to the division below.
Yeah. I was really torn about how to pick my soccer team when I decided to get into soccer. Because I was old enough to the point where I had to kind of, you know, it wasn't just like, oh, my dad was a fan of X, so I'm a fan of X now. 2010 World Cup, I decided I'm going to get really into the World Cup this year. And I was watching it, and I was like, all right, I need to pick an EPL team because I'm really enjoying this World Cup. And the team that I latched onto in the World Cup that year that was like, this team is really fun to watch, was the Ivory Coast. And the Ivory Coast best player was Didier Drogba. So I go, all right, I'm rooting for whatever team he plays for. And that was Chelsea. So
that's good enough.
Made me a Chelsea fan.
So after I took the bar exam, Jane and I went on a trip. And we went to part of the trip. We went to Tokyo, where she went to high school. And we went by her old neighborhood, and her old house is now the Ivory Coast embassy in Tokyo.
No kidding.
Yeah, we were like, oh, I mean, we can like knock on the door and see who's living there now. And we were like, oh, nope.
That's wild.
Yeah. So Hall of Fame happened.
Yeah, we need to wrap up soon, but I do want to talk a little bit of Hall of Fame.
Jack Morris is definitely the bummer of this group.
I was trolling my Tigers fan buddy at work yesterday about how Dave Steeb deserves to be in the Hall of Fame over Jack Morris. It was entertaining. But Tomy is obviously the most noteworthy thing to us. I wrote about him this morning. You know, 3.5 years with the White Sox, but, you know, still around the org a lot. He's a special assistant to the VP/general manager. You know, generally all around likable guy, had a great 3.5 years with the White Sox, hit his 500th home run there, hit the walk-off home, or not the walk-off home run, but the go-ahead home run in the blackout game in 2008, last time the White Sox made the playoffs. So obviously thrilled about that, not that it was not expected.
Yeah, well, it would have been horrible if he hadn't.
Yeah.
and like, yeah, it's also kind of troubling that it's like, okay, he hit that home run and then also had like a couple, I think he saw one more season with the White Sox and then had another good season and then like was around for a while and then retired and then made the Hall of Fame, and it's still been that long since the White Sox.
I know.
He was still the last one that got them in there. Like, oh gosh, I wonder how many guys from that 2008 team are still even like in the majors.
That's a good question. The one thing I did look up yesterday is what the guy that the White Sox acquired for Jim Tomy when they traded him in that August waiver deal to the Dodgers, I believe it was.
Oh, yeah, it was the Dodgers. They were trying to give him a shot at the playoffs. Yeah.
I looked him up, and I can't recall his name off the top of my head now, but he has not played organized baseball since 2010. He played a couple years. He had a couple. He had a year or two in Birmingham where he hit like under 200, and I'm assuming retired. All right, 2008 White Sox.
I think Gavin Floyd is still making a go of it. Is he the last one? He didn't pitch last year. He was hurt, but I mean, he was.
Dwayne Wise isn't still around somewhere, is he?
No, God, no. But I mean, like, Gavin Floyd was a really.
Boone Logan.
Oh, Boone Logan. Gavin Floyd was a good reliever. He's still been a good reliever when he's been healthy, but he just hasn't been.
Yeah. Boone Logan and Clayton Richard.
Oh, Clayton Richard. That's right.
Those would be Clayton Richard. That was his. He was 24, and he...
I like how the 31-year-old catcher made it farther than most of these guys. I think Carlos Quentin was talking about like trying to come back.
Maybe. I mean, Mike McDougal was on that team. Lance Broadway was on that team.
Oh, McDougal was still. Chris Getz is now the director of player development.
Matt Thornton retired a year or two ago, right?
He made it pretty far.
Javier Vasquez is gone. Javier Vasquez.
Oh, yeah. Vasquez was eligible for the ballot but wasn't on it.
Yeah, which was some bullshit.
Agreed.
Obviously, yeah. I mean, I guess Danks probably isn't technically retired, but he's not going to play organized baseball anymore.
I think it's just Floyd and Boone Logan at this point.
Wait, who is the backup catcher you were talking about? Paul Phillips?
Not backup catcher. It's Pierzynski.
Oh, AJ. Yeah.
Because he just retired like last year, right?
Yeah, that's true. Geez. I mean, Uribe made it. Was one of the longest on that group. Swisher retired a few years ago.
Wait, is Jason Bourgeois still playing?
Oh, he was in the system last year.
Yeah, he was in Charlotte, I think.
My God. And he was 26.
Yeah, I mean, he played. Yeah.
Well, no, wait. Oh, wait.
He played in the Mexican League. He played in Charlotte. I think he still counts. He's still playing. Yeah. He could still get called up to, like, play. Like, if he got a major league plate appearance this year, it would not be, like, the weirdest thing.
So he was with the White Sox in 2008. Since then, he's gone to Milwaukee, Houston, Kansas City, Tampa, Cincinnati, Arizona, and then back with the White Sox.
And Hermosillo and Mazatlan.
good stuff.
But yeah, Jim Thome, like, awesome dude, awesome player. I remember going to I think the first major league game I ever went to was not a White Sox game. It was a Yankees Indians doubleheader. And I remember Jim Thome was the third baseman for the Indians at the time. And I remember seeing his name on the scoreboard and being like, wow, this dude's hitting like 340. He's amazing.
Yeah.
and he was amazing. That was not a dumb opinion.
And he was a monster. I mean, it's like, I've gone to a few Rangers games. I went to a few, games in Round Rock and saw Joey Gallo play third base. And, you know, I mean, Joey Gallo obviously could dream of having a career like Jim Thome's, but seeing him play third base, and I imagine it's a lot like what it was like seeing young Jim Thome play third base, just considering the size of the person.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, he was a clear person to go in. Chipper Jones was easy. I was happy to see Vlad went in, even if I don't think Vlad's like as slam dunk of a choice as people seem to, as the voters clearly thought. Not in and of his own right, but like relative to some of these guys who are struggling to get in or not getting in, it's like, Vlad was like amazing and flashy as hell and like absolutely deserves to be in, but like. The idea that he's going to sail it, man. Maybe I'm just way too into Larry Walker. I don't know.
No, I get it. I get it. I've thought about this a lot the last few days because you see stuff like, oh, you know, another modern closer went in and Trevor Hoffman, and we were bemoaning all of the supposed support for Omar Vizquel, even though I think he only got 33%.
But that's a lot. That's a strong debut.
But it's not necessarily that I think these guys are not worthy of consideration, even if I don't necessarily think this guy's a Hall of Famer. But the anger does not come from a place of I'm mad that these guys are being considered because I think that they're all worthy of at least a discussion or some consideration. It's that they're getting more support than players I view as superior, like Scott Rolen, like Larry Walker. That's where – and with Hoffman, the thing I think about is, okay, well, if Trevor – you know, you said if Vlad's such a shoo-in, then what's the deal with Larry Walker? I think, well, if Hoffman's such a shoo-in, what's the deal with Billy Wagner? You know, I don't even know if I necessarily think Billy Wagner is a Hall of Famer, but I don't think that there's that much of a difference there where Hoffman gets in on his – was this his first or second year, third year on the ballot, and Wagner's sitting down there in the 20s or 30s or 40%.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's I don't think the difference is that stark. Obviously, some of it's just people looking at saves or whatever. But,
yeah,
you know, it's, I mean, the best argument for Hoffman over Wagner is innings. I think he's got, like – 1,000 innings and Wagner is like 850 or something, but yeah, no, Wagner was a better pitcher on a rate basis, and yeah, no, I agree.
Johan Santana fell off the ballot,
where it's like, yeah, he did, and that's kind of I don't like disagree with anybody who didn't vote for him, but it's also like weird that he just fell off, right? And like. You look at Omar Vizquel getting 35% of the vote, and it's like Kenny Lofton fell off in his first year. Kenny Lofton was like way better than I think was a better player than Omar Vizquel.
Yeah, Jim Edmonds.
These are, you know, Jack Morris goes in, Lou Whitaker doesn't. I've already ranted to Frank and Mark about this, so I won't torture our listeners.
I mostly just brought this up so we could celebrate Tomey, and now we're just going into.
Well, Tomey. Well, what's fun by W. I was actually talking to a coworker today who was. I was talking to a couple coworkers and we were talking baseball and all things. They were talking about how remembering fondly how many insane first basemen there were in the 90s, which was fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Even going deeper down as like to Andre Galarraga,
Mo Vaughn,
Cecil Fielder, and Mo Vaughn. Yeah, like. Even like Eric Karros being like the 20th best, it's like this dude hits 30 homers a year. Like this guy's great. But Jim Tomey, he was one of these guys. Was like, well, I don't know if like Tomey was like all that great. And I'm like, Jim Tomey, for WRC plus for his career, over 10,000 plate appearances. So that's like on the upper end. With more plate appearances, he has the same. WRC plus as Willie McCovey and Willie Stargell. Yes. He played almost twice as long as Ralph Kiner, was almost the same rate stats as Ralph Kiner. He was ahead of ahead of Eddie Matthews, ahead of Harmon Killebrew, ahead of Chipper Jones as a hitter for that matter. Obviously, you know, third base is more valuable, but ahead of A-Rod, like dude was one of the 50 best hitters of all time for like a long time. So he was a slam dunk and I'm glad he was appropriately done. Chipper Jones was like an easy one. People are upset about Edgar. I think Edgar, I've pushed too hard on like the opposite thing where it's like, look, I think Edgar's a Hall of Famer as well.
You're such a contrarian, Nick.
I know. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he should be in. I think you could defend not having him in your top 10. I think he's probably in the top 10 on this
ballot. But I think now it's like Tim Raines. It's like, well, next year's his last year on the ballot. So it's like, we need to get him in kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that there were people, more deserving than him for sure. But in the same vein where it's like maybe I would have thrown if I had a ballot, maybe I would have thrown Scott Rolen a vote over people who were probably more deserving than Scott Rolen to ensure that he stays on the ballot. I also probably would have made sure to get Edgar in my top 10 because I think he is a Hall of Famer and he only has, 2 years left on the ballot, now 1 year left on the ballot.
Oh yeah. It's been good that we've been getting like three and four guys in a year.
Has it been like 15 over the last 5 years or something like that?
Was it four? It was 4 years. Cause I think 5 years ago was the zero, which was just like a disgrace. Yeah.
I'll never forget the New York Times front page. I think they just did a headline that said, and your Hall of Fame election results, and it was just the whole rest of the front page was blank, something like that. Just one of the outside the box things that they do with their page design often. But that stuck with me.
You're a page design expert.
Expert, putting in air quotes.
I'm an attorney. If you can say string two sentences together about it, you qualify as an expert.
All right, then I'll take it. Anything else? Anything else we missed before we wrapped up? We're closing in on an hour and a half here.
Should I see if the Brewers shook everyone else loose? Have there been any other transactions?
I brought up Twitter in the last 5 or 10 minutes just to see if there's anything else broke while we were talking, and it doesn't appear so. I'm gonna go see the Phantom Thread as soon as we get off this podcast. I did want to make sure to plug, definitely big time shameless plug, the 2018 BP annual comes out in about a week and a half. I think February 4th sounds like the date. I may have made that up, but it's somewhere around there. I should be more professional with these little plugs, but you can pre-order that. There's a link on baseballperspectives.com. If you just search for the Baseball Perspectives 2018 annual on Amazon, you can pre-order it there. A lot of great work in it this year, most notably the two of us handling the White Sox player comments. So if you enjoy listening to this podcast and reading our work, you can read more of it in this year's annual, which I'm really excited for the release. I know it's both of our first time as contributors.
And, true.
And I did a tiny bit of help with some editing work on the book too, so I can say that beyond the White Sox stuff, there's a lot of good work in there, just as there always is from a plethora of writers.
So. I was on my honeymoon. I couldn't help with editing this year. I did the year before. Yeah. But I'm really excited. I mean, I remember being like a child and my dad getting this new book. And I remember being really confused. I was like, why does it project Magliar Donis hitting less home runs next year than he did last year? Like trying to explain regression and probability to me. And I was like just 9 and mad. or whatever, 11, whatever it was. It's going to be pretty crazy to see our, I mean, should we could pull a Jeff and Jarrett and, read a comment each, as a teaser. I don't know where they're at post editing or what.
We probably still have that Google Doc somewhere.
I have it.
We should definitely play the game. James said he was down for this. After it releases, we can play who wrote this comment between the two of us. Which
that was my idea.
Yeah, no, I know. I was just saying it on the air. I think that would be a lot of fun. I feel like, I mean, James has been. James is the reason both of us are doing this today, and so he's edited a majority of the things that we've written that have appeared on the internet. So I feel like he would probably be better at it than most. So
I'd like to see James versus – maybe we make it James versus Matt if we can get all of them.
Oh, that would be good because Matt has edited us just as much, if not,
He was the one who pulled me in. So, I think that could be really – that's going to be a good game. Did you have any comments that – you wanted to tease right now, or is that going to ruin the game?
Oh, I don't have it. I don't have it handy. So let's save it, I think.
Okay. You'll have to tune in at least next week. So Amazon has it as February 9th.
Oh, February 9th. Okay.
But sometimes it shows up in physical bookstores before that release date. So if you find it in a bookstore, it's really coming up. I mean, today's what, the 25th. So that's crazy. It's like in a next week or so. It's exciting. It's pitchers and catchers is going to be soon. It's a lot less frustrating. I gotta say, I will wrap up on this thought, for me is we've talked about how the White Sox roster is probably set. They've made the moves that they needed to make. They added, a couple hundred innings at the major league level in between the Jake Peter trade and the Miguel Gonzalez signing. So I'm not too worried about that. And trading for Vieira is, another guy who could soak up some innings. And, the Wellington Castillo, they've certainly got plenty of position players to cycle through and sort. So it's a lot less infuriating. this offseason. You know what I mean? Like, it's been tedious as a fan because it's not as fun to have nothing happen and nothing to write about or talk about. But at the same time, at least it's not like the 2015 to 2016 offseason where it's like, man, they have some really profound needs on this otherwise good team and the free agents are just sitting there and they just don't sign them.
Yeah, that the inaction makes sense. I mean,
yes.
Just if you're upset about anything about the White Sox lack of action this season, just put yourself in the shoes of a Mets fan or, I don't know, a Mariners fan.
I would have said a Brewers fan, maybe even arguably before tonight.
A Cubs fan? Shit, I mean.
The Phillies should arguably go sign a ton of dudes. Or,
well, they did get Carlos Santana.
Yeah, right. Previously, the biggest contract this offseason. That was kind of weird.
Yeah.
After Rhys Hoskins breaks out and you have no pitchers and you say we need, besides Aaron Nola, and you sign a first baseman.
But yeah.
I guess the Angels were active this offseason, but there are some fringe competitors that it's hard to justify what they're doing or not doing, I would think, at this point. I'm a little surprised. I mean, maybe Arizona's tapped out financially, but I don't know. It's strange. But Colin, it's been good talking to you again. Missed you,
yeah,
bud.
Yeah, you too. Let's do this again soon, huh?
Yeah, why not?
All right. Good night, everybody.